Okay, pop quiz, everyone. Where in the greater Kansas City area can you play horseshoes, enter a pie contest, and attend a livestock auction, demolition derby, and pig race, all in one weekend? That's easy. It's the Wyandotte County Fair. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we'll hear how county and state fairs have changed over the years, especially in Wyandotte County, where the rural and urban exist side by side. Plus, remember Charlotte's Web? When Wilbur and the other pigs are judged at the fair? Well, just what makes a good pig? Or chicken, or cow, or sheep, for that matter? We'll ask a panel of livestock judges. That's coming up on Central Standard, right after this news.
I should respond.
A century ago, farming and ranching dominated the plains. County and state fairs were special opportunities for communities to gather to exchange goods and knowledge. In today's highly connected world, where food producers account for a mere sliver of the population, the Central Standard team got to wondering whether the county fair serves a whole new purpose these days, and if so, we'd really like to know where funnel cake enters the picture. We'll get to that in a minute, and just saying funnel cake made my mouth water, but first, the Wyandotte County Fair is happening right now, just off of State Avenue in KCK. The tents are raised and the lights are up. There are shows to watch and fried foods to eat. Prize goats are being judged as we speak. That's actually happening right now. But as recently as last week, the fairgrounds were just open fields. KCUR intern Christina Leffring went to see how it all came together.
The week before the fair opens, crews are preparing the grounds and tents. Wade Torrey, the groundskeeper, drives a bobcat piled high with crates.
It's not really a complicated job, it's just a lot of manual labor.
During the fair, Torrey says he has several 15 to 16 hour days. But considering the fair's a week away, he is pretty calm. So is Amy Krause, who manages the fair's office. She's overseeing an event that involves everything from Irish singers to nacho stands, but a lot of her work is pretty mundane.
They needed me to call and have the septic system pumped, and so I did that. Right now I'm troubleshooting the printer because it's falling apart. A little bit of everything. Whatever everybody on the board needs, that's what I'm here for. So
the board is the Wyandotte County Fair Board. Each board member has organized one aspect of the fair, which they will hand off to Krause. For example, the one-inch thick binder of all 125 vendors a board member dropped off.
And so she said, now this is yours.
Most of the fair's organizers fell into planning the fair after participating in 4-H growing up. 4-H is a youth organization where kids complete projects that will be judged at the fair. Pam Howe from the Wyandotte County 4-H handles the logistics for the competitions.
They have to have the animal tagged, they have to have ribbons, and they have to set up the pens, they have to put beddings. You would be surprised.
While the rules for entering the competitions are written out in 4-H's manual, Howe says they can be complicated. A lot of her time is spent answering questions from parents and participants.
I had shown in my fair back in my hometown. I had no clue what went on behind the scenes.
It takes a lot of patience, a lot of sticky notes, and a lot of Google searches. So you just have to keep all your ducks in a row, literally and figuratively.
Youth coordinator Olivia Moore showed livestock with 4-H for 9 years. She says a lot of urban kids in Wyandotte County associate 4-H with agriculture.
That's been a big barrier to some of our kids joining 4-H because they think it's only cows and horses and livestock. 4-H is way bigger than just having a chicken.
The 4-H has expanded to include 125 different types of projects, including rocketry, geology, and cake decorating. But with all of that, the biggest concern is something the organizers have no control over.
I am concerned about the weather, although that's not on my checklist. Animals get stressed out when it's really hot. Kids and parents get stressed out when it's hot. Everything seems to be an emergency when it's hot. So the heat just brings an added layer of craziness to the fair.
It's the day before the fair officially opens. The carnival that arrived last night is setting up and testing their rides. The food trucks are preparing for a week of funnel cakes and corn dogs. Since there are so many 4-H projects, the judging has already begun, so packs of kids are running around the fairgrounds. Quilts, cakes, and canned foods are laid out for display. Over the hill, over 100 chickens and rabbits are housed in a barn with about 20 fans spaced out every 4 or 5 cages. Cages have frozen water bottles, and shades hang from the sides of the barns. All of this is to prevent the animals from overheating. The heat index is 103 degrees. Over by the pony corral, the Addinct family is gathered by the fence. The daughters are trying to entice a horse by holding out offerings of grass and flowers, which one of the horses accepts.
My sisters have always dreamed of feeding a horse.
While their parents are from rural backgrounds, the kids are growing up in urban Wyandotte County, so seeing a horse is exciting for them. And for the organizers, that's part of what makes the mountains of paperwork, hours of manual labor, endless questions, and long hours worthwhile.
And we're back in the studio. I'm Gina Kaufman, and as Christina Leffring just reported, the kids coming to the Wyandotte County Fair these days are not necessarily farm kids. A lot of them are city kids feeding horses for the first time. Here to talk about the changing role of the county fair is Jim Tucker, president and CEO of the International Association of Fairs and Expos. He's with us from the studios of KSMU in Springfield, Missouri. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How about you?
Well, doing very well.
Is it hot in Springfield, too?
Oh, no. Yes, of course. But we've had some very nice weather this summer, and it looks like it's going to be a very good summer for county and state agricultural fairs across the country.
Jim, when did America's rural counties start convening county fairs? What inspired that?
Well, the history of fairs actually is it came from the old country, like much of our traditions in this country. The Royal Agriculture Society of the English Commonwealth, Royal Agriculture Societies of other European countries were in existence for many years and had shows. And when those when the individuals that participated in those shows came to this country in the late 1700s, mid-1700s, one of the things they started was fairs.
That's fascinating. Well, how has the county fair changed in recent generations?
Well, the county fair initially was put into existence by government, as were the state fairs, with the purpose of providing a place for those in agriculture, farmers basically, to come and learn the latest, to share their best practices, and also to have an opportunity to select the superior genes from the gene pool of beef cattle, dairy cattle, chickens, hogs, all the farm animals. That model worked very well and made a tremendous contribution to the Green Revolution, which has enabled us to feed a globe now with over 7 billion people on it, headed for 9 billion by the middle of this century.
Explain what you mean by Green Revolution.
The Green Revolution was in large part prompted by Norman Borlaug from Nebraska, who developed breeding practices for wheat, and the wheat was introduced in India, China, various places in the world, and permitted food production to occur on this globe at a point that allowed our population to grow to the number that it currently is.
Well, and recently, it does seem like the county fair and the role of agriculture and all of these things have been changing. How would you characterize that difference?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It certainly has been changing, in large part driven by the change of demographics in this country. When agricultural fairs began in this country, the population was primarily rural, primarily agriculture, primarily people involved in producing food and fiber. The population numbers now, less than 2% of our population in this country is engaged in production agriculture, and less than 1% actually have farm animals. So we have a population that is expecting to eat 3 meals a day or more and hopefully toss some fun fair food in along the way. but know very little about how their food is produced, how fiber is produced, and now, indeed, we are asking production agriculture to produce fuel for this country. So the role of the agricultural fair initially to help the farmer learn the latest is now shifting towards educating the urban population about something that is extremely important to their daily lives and very important to the national security of this country, as we frankly need to be in a position where we can feed ourselves and, you know, to a large extent, we're feeding a large part of the world with the food that's grown here in the breadbasket, which is Wyandotte County's smack dab in the middle of it here in the Midwestern part of the United States.
There are so many trends these days that do sort of a blurring of the lines that separate urban and rural life, backyard chickens, farmers markets, even craft beer. Is that an opportunity for the county fair?
It absolutely is an opportunity. You know, it's been fun for me to watch the evolution of the use of locally grown food and people wanting to know where their food comes from. And the fun part about this, I think, is a lot of folks went to the grocery store, and now they've gone from going to the grocery store and getting their food in hermetically sealed plastic bags to going to the farmer's market, and they're kind of, whoa, what do I pick? Well, you pick out the fruits and vegetables that have been being picked out by judges at county fairs for a couple of centuries. So we really have a great laboratory classroom, if you will. Come out to the fair, watch the fruits and vegetables be judged by experts, and that will help you, if you're going to go to the local farmer's market, pick out the best food.
Well, and you just kind of answered this, but I want to give you a chance to really answer it directly. Why do fairs matter if less than 1% of the population has farm animals, for example?
Yeah, well, I would say the reason they matter, number one, is because they are undertaking to educate the public about something that's very important, as I emphasized earlier. It's interesting, in 2006, the United States Department of Education did a study of the 7th through 12th grade schools in this country. There's about 38,000 of them, to see how many had a formal agriculture education program in their curriculum. And as it turns out, 82% do not have any formal agriculture education in their curriculum. And if you go to an urban area like Kansas City or St. Louis, 98% do not have any formal agriculture education in their curriculum.
Wow.
And so my position is basically government, local government, essentially has defaulted in educating us about agriculture. So the agricultural fair, and agricultural fairs are county fairs, state fairs are quasi-government or government volunteer-based community celebrations about agriculture. They bubble up from the community. They contribute to the fabric of the community. And they provide wonderful family entertainment in a unique venue. So we go back to, A, we've got to educate. B, we want to entertain. And C, we want to have one of those institutions we don't want to have. We are one of those institutions in the community that causes us to get together annually and see our neighbors, see folks we may not see any other time of the year, well, catch up with each other and build on what the community needs to do to continue to be successful.
Well, we'll get more in depth in this conversation with Jim Tucker later in the hour, but now it's time to take a look at what actually goes on at the fair today. For that, we're joined by two livestock judges here to tell us about what makes a chicken or a hog top quality. Let's say hi to Zach McCracken. He's a feed salesman for Southern Foods. And Jack, I hear you're a nationally renowned swine judge.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. How are you this morning, Gina?
Great. How about you?
Good, good. Enjoying life.
Well, I've noticed that people in your line of work tend to use the word swine, not pigs. Is there a difference?
It's pigs and swine, same thing, same species.
So you don't mind if I say pigs sometimes?
As we talk pig would be a singular.
Oh, okay.
Swine would be a plural, or pigs would be plural as well.
Interesting. Okay, so that's just grammar. And do you mind my asking how you got into judging swine?
you know, it all started back, like Jim mentioned, back in elementary school. Whenever I joined 4-H, I was probably a fifth grader. Whenever I got started judging livestock, a lot of the older kids did it. So I kind of tried following their footsteps and understanding why are they selecting that animal to take to the county fair, and then why are they so successful at the county fair. It goes hand in hand there. But I started out very young and continued through elementary school and out through college, and then currently do it as a side profession, traveling across the country, judging hog shows and beef shows.
We've also got here in the studio with us Bill Elder, who is a senior art director at 2 West today as a grown-up. But, Bill, you were a champion chicken judge as a child.
Well, yeah, third place, you know, at the state fair.
What does it mean to be – what does that mean?
Well, yeah, no, I, you know, I competed, you know, in the county – actually, the exact same thing that Zach did. Started as a kid and then competed in the county fair and then the, you know, state fair and got a – you know, a place at the state fair and went on the national team to judge in Louisville, Kentucky for the state.
So it's not just the animals who are competing with one another. The judges are actually competing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're judging the judges.
That's really funny.
Yeah. It is an interesting way to do it, but it is awesome. It's a lot of fun.
Bill, when you judge chickens, what are some of the things that you would say really stand out as things you look for that tell you, like, I'm looking at a great chicken right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot like the swine and pig also. It's like, you know, just like the health of the animal and, you know, the quality of the cut and the look. And you try to judge – it's an interesting way to think about it, but you're trying to judge what's inside the animal from outside the animal.
Hmm.
For the chickens, you know, it's also like a laying capacity. It's not like you judge a swine on what their next swine is going to look like, but you kind of do. It was very interesting to try to understand like how good a chicken's going to be at laying eggs, but it was very interesting for me. And yeah, there's a lot of little stuff like, you know, how their feathers look and how they're built and those kind of things.
Well, we're going to get more about chickens later, but I want to turn back to Zach McCracken. Zach, what are some of the things you pay special attention to when you're looking at a pig?
It's a very interesting question, and that you hear that a lot, and sometimes you say, what's the best way to answer that? And like he had, Bill had mentioned there, it's comprised of a lot of different details, whether the hair coat of the animal, but like he had said, we're trying to project this animal to be consumed, right, as a piece of protein, and we are going to want to look for an animal that's really heavy-muscled. And we want to be able to look at that animal and say that they could handle their skeleton and cover the, you know, across the surface and cover ground to be able to get up and eat and drink comfortably. So we're going to judge them for their structural correctness. And then as well, you know, within the show ring, we call it some look. We want some them animals to be attractive. And I think a lot comprised of that is the hair coat and how well the people take care of their animals.
And when you award a prize to a hog, is it about the animal you see before you? In some ways, you've just described like the coat and the appearance. Or is it about the kind of meat you imagine will be served at the table someday after the animal is butchered? Or processed, as they like to say now.
Yes, yes, yes. It's comprised of all those details. But we'll look for an animal that has the fewest amount of flaws in it, in my opinion.
What's a flaw?
Fault. You know, fault. Like a, let's say that they're very light muscled, you know, we those animals aren't going to go and produce as much meat on the rail, right, as compared to a really heavy muscled animal. So then in return, you're not going to get as much dollar value once we sell that meat, correct?
Yeah.
So it all comes back to the basic production of livestock and what are we producing these animals for? We are producing them for consumption and meat consumption. So
heavy muscle is good. Anything else when it comes to thinking about the food aspect of things?
Yes, heavy muscled with combined with some fat cover. We always talk about fat providing flavor into the muscle tissue. Yet at the same time, we do not want them to be overly fat because then you're giving up muscle for fat. You know, muscle is what we're consuming, right? Fat is just an addition for flavor and a part of the whole piece of the puzzle.
Have you ever found a perfect specimen?
I would say that, you know, I might have personally thought that I found the best one I'd ever seen, but compared to, say, Bill, maybe if he went out and looked at hogs, he'd have a whole new image of what the perfect specimen might be. And I might have the same thing for a perfect chicken. It's all within the judge itself. We all comprise around a general idea of what's the best hog out there, a really heavy-muscled, structurally correct, attractive animal to be the perfect animal. But to say that everybody's got their emphasis on different criteria, you know.
And you've judged all kinds of livestock, right?
Yes, ma'am.
What are the kinds of livestock you've judged?
Like growing up, I started with hogs, cattle, and sheep. And then as, you know, production agriculture has advanced, and especially in 4-H, you know, there's a lot of meat goats starting to be shown, which is very interesting and intriguing. So I've judged quite a few meat goats across the country, and then a little dabble into the horses. We'll have some horse judging at some different collegiate college judging contests, but I would say the biggest brunt of it is hogs, cattle, sheep, and goats.
What's your favorite animal to sort of evaluate and think about?
I would say that hogs and cattle, particularly just because that's the most experience I have within the agriculture field.
And when you talked about horses, is that for criteria other than for meat, or what is the horse judging about?
A lot of horse judging, you know, a horse is for pleasure of riding. So we're going to look at a lot of structural correctness within a horse. Granted, we need them horses. If they were, say, a driving horse to take a carrier, we need those horses to be built strong and stout. But at the same time, structural correctness is a big emphasis on horse judging.
And you travel around quite a bit to do this judging, as we mentioned. Are there differences in how fairs work from region to region, or differences in what people in various places seem to look for in swine or beef?
Yes and no. I mean the fairs themselves, some run differently. But as far as, you know, the what we're selecting for within the hogs, cattle, sheep, and goats, it's all derived off the industry and where we're at today. We look back in the 60s and 70s and we look at swine, and they are really a small statured animal that are a little bit more heavier in fat, you know, not as much muscle. Today in age, we're looking at animals that are a little bigger skeleton with a compromise between muscle and fat. So as the industry changes, our judging selection is going to change.
Who changes those standards? Is it the butcher? Is it the chef? Is it the average American eater? Who is behind that change in what we expect or want?
Everybody on the radio and yourself, Gina. The consumer. The consumer themselves. You know, we're going to look as people are starting to eat healthier, you know, we're going toward the leaner meat. So as we do that, the industry is going to follow.
And, well, we're going to turn in just a second to someone who can speak to that. Alex Pope of Local Pig, a purveyor of local meats in the West Bottoms, is here to weigh in on the changing standards for pigs because, Alex, you look closely at pigs on a regular basis and you serve customers with particular tastes, right?
That's correct, Gina. Thanks for having us on. And we're actually in the East Bottoms.
In the East Bottoms. I apologize.
That's okay. It's on the east side of the Bourbon Market. But, yes, we...
And do you feel like what people want in pork has changed in recent years?
I think so. You know, what the gentleman is speaking to about looking for lean pork and older pigs having more fat, that's actually the pigs we seek out, is the older style, more fat-laden pigs.
Why is that?
It makes a better product for what we're serving. And, you know, what we're doing is more old-school charcuterie production, which is, you know, your bacon and sausages and force meats, and that kind of stuff needs a good amount of hard fat in order to make it correctly. So, you know, we don't have a giant market share, but there are a lot of people that are still looking for that, you know, more fat-laden pig. And it's not like the pig's just rolling around fat. It's just got a good cover of fat and has a good thick belly.
You educate city folk about where their meat comes from animal-wise all the time, and you help them make that connection. It sounds like that's part of the purpose of the county fair at this point as well. So why do you think that that connection is important? A lot of people might prefer not to think about animals at all when consuming meat.
You know, a lot of people do prefer that, but you know, there are a lot of people that also want to have a connection with what they're consuming, and they want to know what's going on. There's, but you know, every time we have a foodborne illness outbreak coming from a giant factory, processed meats, people get freaked out because they don't know how is this, you know, poisonous meat getting into my system. So people are, you know, I think there's a desire to just make sure everything's safe and think about products, meat products, as more than just food, but as, you know, as the animal that they were, and think about how they were raised and, you know, all the different things that go into them.
If you were to go to a county fair, say, and judge swine, what would you be looking for?
Well, I would be looking for, you know, I'm looking for a lot of belly on a pig. You know, there are different breeds, just like, you know, all animals have different breeds within their own breed. And, you know, what we're looking for are breeds that carry a lot of belly.
Why? I think we're having some connection difficulty with Alex, so we'll maybe get back to him later. But in case we aren't able to, Alex, it was fun talking with you. Alex Pope has been with us by phone from the local pig in the East Bottoms. And Zach McCracken, back to you. Did you hear a lot about people who are looking, have these sort of niche markets in agriculture these days?
Yes, everybody does. Like Alex just said there, you know, the question, referring back to the question you had earlier, did you ever find the perfect specimen? You know, like Alex's business is derived off of, you know, bacon and sausage. And like I had mentioned, the fat provides a lot of flavor there. So his deeming ideal animal is going to be a little heavier and in the belly, and it's going to provide to his consumer better, you know, with those bigger bellies and such. But yes, it's very interesting how everybody has maybe a different idea of what the perfect animal is.
If you had a crystal ball looking into the future, do you have predictions about how the perfect pig is going to be seen differently in the near future?
I think it goes, as we've been talking, it all comes back to supplying food for the world and ourselves, you know, in the United States. We're producing more on less. We're taking, you know, an animal that right now, I say a fat hog weighs 285 pounds at its market weight. You know, we are going to maybe push that level even higher because of the decreasing amount of people being involved in agriculture and producers out there. So we're going to have to produce on more on less. And same goes for, you know, the corn, you know, that we're growing. You know, we're going to have to produce more bushels of corn per acre or wheat or whatever it is in agriculture. We're going to produce more of that.
Well, thanks so much. We'll be getting back to this conversation shortly. We'll be back to Bill Elder about chickens and Jim Tucker, president and CEO of the International Association of Fairs and Expos. Central Standard will be right back.
Would you bring me some coffee and a hot ham sandwich, please?
Good idea, coffee and a ham sandwich. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard. And today we're talking about the changing role of the agricultural fair. Right now, the Wyandotte County Fair is going on in a county that most people think of as urban, but does have quite a bit of rural activity. And we're looking at why these fairs still matter today when less than 2% of the population is in agriculture, as one of our guests has told us earlier in the show. And we'd love to hear from you. Do you think it matters to connect with agriculture in today's world? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. For now, I'm going to get back to our chicken judge, Bill Elder, who's a senior art director at 2 West, and I should acknowledge the husband of one of the producers of this show, Sylvia Maria Gross.
Yes, that's right.
So we're just acknowledging that, everyone. But Bill is a champion chicken judge from his youth.
Yeah, it was a great moment in my life, you know, to be on that team.
And you judge not just chickens, but other kinds of livestock.
Yeah, actually, a lot like what Zach was saying earlier about growing up in 4-H and where I was in rural Kansas, we did all of those things. We judged livestock and, yeah, swine, sheep, cattle, and even the – I think I even did horses a couple of times at like a regional competition.
Take me back, because I definitely grew up as a city kid, and this is a totally foreign kind of experience to me. So talk to me about when you first got involved in this, just on a really intimate level. Like, what got your interest? What captivated you enough to really pursue it for quite a while?
Yeah, well, you know, it started off as just being something that you wanted to do as part of, like, being in 4-H and being a younger kid in 4-H and seeing the older kids doing it.
Explain 4-H for city listeners who might not be very familiar.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, kind of like FFA, but, like, if you don't do either one of those, it's a way for kids to learn a lot of different skills, a lot of social skills, and then also a lot of skills with, you know, well, not just cattle, but also just all sorts of parts of life. I mean, I took rocketry and, you know, pretty far into it. I had cattle and sheep and hogs also, all, you know, on the farm. But I also grew up on a farm, so that was part of having that, having access to that. So that was fun.
Zach, did you also grow up on a farm? All right. Well, Bill.
Yeah, no, I think that going back to your question, not just did I grow up with all of that and being in 4-H got me to learning, you know, about judging all these different animals, but like what made me pursue it further and go all the way into high school, because actually that poultry judging third place that I got, it was all the way in high school, like my freshman year of high school, because I wanted to get out of the county. I wanted to expand my horizons and go somewhere, and that was like the ticket out of town. Basically, you could go to Louisville, Kentucky, on the national or on the state team and compete nationally if you somehow got, you know, one, two, or three at the state competition. And it just happened that I got third place. So I got to go. And really, it was to get out of town and go somewhere new. It just happened that it caught me at the exact moment that I was, you know, starting on the freshman football team. So that was really awkward. That's cool.
Why was that awkward?
Because you know, to tell everybody, oh, I gotta skip practice to go to the national chicken judging competition, drew some flack on the team.
If you don't mind my asking, I know it's uncomfortable to brag, but what do you think made you a good chicken judge?
Well, you know, being a good student, I had a great, you know, we had a coach that really could nail it, and like he was a producer, and like his story goes back to sort of all of the rest of what you're talking about right here. You know, he had like 6,000 chickens on a, you know, an automated in a shed there from the 60s. And he had taken kids to the state fair and to the national judging for 30 years before I got there.
Wow.
So it was a big deal. It was like really kind of like the ticket was printed. All you have to do is, you know how to do it. And so he taught us everything about how to do the poultry judging, and that worked out really well. And you know, actually, it was funny going back to like the state fair, going to county fair, state fair. We judged several different things, and that was a reason to go to the state fair, to go to Hutchinson, and you know, again, get out of town in the summer and go judge livestock and poultry and judge photography. You know, like there were several different kinds of judging you could do in 4-H. And that was really, again, learning the standards of each one of those skills. So, you know, 4-H taught me photography, too. So it's not just like it's for livestock or for rural people. It's for like everybody to learn a lot of different skills.
Zach, are you relating to a lot of what you hear Bill talking about?
Yes, I am. Like you had mentioned, you know, not only in production, agriculture, hogs, cattle, sheep, you know, being able to go out, and I did a lot of woodworking or metalwork in 4-H, you know, building projects, and whether it's building Mom and Mother's Day gift or, you know, building a saddle rack, you know, to put my saddle for my horse on, you know, and I think that goes a long way. And some things that he had mentioned, you know, just the responsibility and other intricate values that kids gain in 4-H, you know, being able to be sociable with others, you know, the social skills involved and communication is great, you know, getting kids to see what else is out there and get experience in the world.
And Zach, I asked our guest earlier what he thought that why fairs still matter, or do they still matter? What do you think? You travel all over the country going to these fairs.
I think it's huge. You know, not only is it big for the kids that are involved in 4-H, really to go and show the pieces that they've learned and show their prized piece of livestock or piece of photography or rocketry. But like he had mentioned, you know, other individuals outside in the community being able to come in and learn about agriculture or learn about what other kids are learning in rocketry and the pieces behind what makes a rocket fly to the sky. I think just it's a big piece of our society and people wanting to learn more. And I think the 4-H and the fair plays a huge piece in that.
Zach, what is the next fair you're going to? Where is it going to be?
Let's see. What is the next one? I've got one on the books. I think it was the Atchison County Beef Show was going to judge.
Well, what are you looking forward to at the Atchison County Beef Competition?
I'm looking forward. You know, we meet a lot of people at doing these events. You know, meeting those folks and working with the youth. I love working with kids. I wouldn't be where I am today without 4-H. Just the tools and pieces I've gained, you know, in 4-H and taking that to my profession. I wouldn't be where I am today without it.
Well, thanks.
So I guess that's where I stand on it.
I want to thank you so much, Zach McCracken. Zach is a feed salesman for Souther Feeds, and he's off to Atchison. Zach, best of luck to you in Atchison. I hope it's a great time for you there.
Thank you very much.
And now I'd like to turn back to Jim Tucker, President and CEO of the International Association of Fairs and Expos. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Gina.
So you've been listening to this conversation. People out there are still going to fairs. People out there are still judging chickens and swine and beef and horses and goats now, I hear. Could you maybe talk about this new goats development?
Sure can. Yes, a lot of people are going both to see goats be judged and the number of exhibitors bringing goats to county fairs and state fairs, regional fairs across the country is up. And, you know, Gina, I suppose there's more than one reason. One is, I think, the increase in the Hispanic population in this country and the number of goats, the amount of goat that's consumed by that group of folks. The second thing I would say is it's pretty easy to take care of a goat, you know, as compared to a cow and a calf or a horse. A goat's a smaller animal, requires less feed, but you still get those basic fundamentals of I am responsible for the care of an animal. This animal has to be fed and watered, and its creature comforts have to be met on a daily basis, and a young person gets that kind of an experience from raising, grooming, and bringing the best that they can out to the community, to the judges that you just talked to, and say, this is the best I can do. Tell me what you think of it. There are not many places left in our society where that happens, and that's one of the unique things about the competition at our county fairs. You know, I think back about a conversation I recently had when someone compared the county fair to the Final Four or the Super Bowl for 4-H and FFA kids who spend so many hours alone or with their family taking care of these animals, and then they get their moment in their 15 seconds of fame, so to speak, and bring their animal out, and the community takes a look at it, the judges take a look at it, they find out how well they've done, and if they didn't win, they learn what they need to do better next time, and they get the courage to come back and compete again. Just a very healthy environment for young people at the fair who are participants at the fair, not to mention all the fun stuff that's out there for folks that come as spectators.
I want to get back to the fun stuff because I am curious. We've talked so much about what these what these events mean to the communities who participate in them, but what about the people, what about the audience, if you will, like the people who come to the fair, and that's just as guests?
Yeah. Well, I think, Gina, that fairs are more crucial to their communities than ever before. You know, I look at how much time we spend looking at iPhones, high-def laptops, desktops, you name it. We're a society that spends an awfully lot of time looking into a computer screen or some other kind of screen and seeing the, quote, end of quote, virtual world. The fair, the county fair, the state fair is not something that you can find on a city street. You can't read it in a book. You've got to be there. You've got to taste it, touch it, smell it. To really get it. And I think that's one of the things that makes fairs so popular and is causing their attendance to continue to increase in this country is, boy, it's a place where I can really go someplace and do something and be involved and have fun and participate. You know, it's not a sit on the sidelines kind of thing. It's not a look on a screen kind of thing. It's the real world.
So some of the, you mentioned the tastes and smells. Can you elaborate on some of those, some of the common county fair tastes and smells?
Oh, my. you know, the food, of course, has its smells, depending on what kind of food it is. Food that you really don't get a chance to consume or smell anyplace else in the society for the most part. And then you have the smells of the farm, the smells of animals, the sawdust, straw, hay, the various products and crops that are grown on farms are there to be tasted, touched, and smelled. So it's just a fill up your senses, in John Denver's words, kind of an experience that kind of seeps into you everywhere. And I think folks go to the fairs in this country in kind of what I call a sponge mode, Gina. They rush through their daily lives. They get up in the morning and they eat breakfast in the car and they zip down the highway and they run into their office and they sit down in front of the screen at the desk and they work, and they get up and they come home and they haul their kids to two or three events, and the next thing you know, they're watching the evening news and falling asleep. They decide they're going to go to the fair. They're going to take the family. They're going to ride the rides. They're going to taste the food. They're going to see farm animals, and it's the last place in our society where urban folks get to interact with farm animals, and they're going to do it in a frame of mind of, gee, let's kind of see what's going on at the fair this year, what's new, what technology's been introduced at the fair, what the commercial exhibits have, what the farmers are saying, and let's just take our time and enjoy ourselves and have a quality family experience in an environment that provides probably the finest family entertainment one can find anywhere in this country.
Well, we've talked a little bit about maybe the changing audience for fairs. Like, who is this intended for? Because it sounded earlier in the show like you were saying that it was originally created for farmers, and now there are these sort of urban audiences, and there's this commingling that you've been describing. How has the fair itself changed to accommodate these new audiences and these new purposes, or is keeping the fair as it always has been part of the charm?
Well, it's a magic combination, Gina, of keeping it like it was, but introducing each year some new fine arts industries within the community. The technology advancements in agriculture alone with global positioning satellites and what that's meant is just remarkable, and one could spend many days learning about that. Those opportunities are available at the fair for the urban as well as country folk to see.
But so are you saying that there are those still sort of agricultural innovations unfolding at these fairs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The changes that have been brought about by global positioning satellite and production agriculture the last 10, 15 years just blow one's mind, frankly.
Can you explain the global positioning satellite?
You bet. The tractors today, modern tractors, and even you can retrofit tractors with a unit that reads its position on the face of the Earth based on the location of three or five satellites up in space. And by being able to do that, then the tractor, if you will, the computer knows where the tractor is in the field. Is this a wet area in the field? Is this an area of the field that has lower nutrients and needs to have more fertilizer, more amendments to the soil made in that location? I farm. My son, my family farms here in southwest Missouri, and we do a lot of work at night now. If you were planting a crop, you know, you look down those corn rows out there in the countryside, and they're all straight, and they're all the same distance apart, and you go, wow, that's amazing. How do you do it? Well, we did it for years by doing it in the daylight and looking carefully and watching where we drove. Now we're planting stuff at night because you can set the tractor. You have a device that is connected to the global positioning satellite reader that drives the tractor down the row. And from 10 o'clock at night till 4 o'clock in the morning, we planted corn this spring because the weather really gave us, it was the only window of opportunity that we had, and the rows are perfect. They're straight as they can be. So a lot of productivity, a lot of efficiencies are being gained by global positioning satellite, not to mention tracking the production itself. You drive around a field now in a tractor that's connected to the Internet through global positioning satellites and networks that are broadcast off of the top of our grain bin, for example. We know, we put things in the cloud immediately. We know what's going on with our fields and our crops.
And so these are the kinds of technologies that just that anyone coming to fairs is likely to get a chance to glimpse or experience in some way?
Yes and yes. They're going to get this chance to see them, and the people in the business of selling this technology, as well as the implement dealers, will have demonstrations of how that stuff works.
There are also things that go on at the fair that might seem unrelated, and I'm wondering if you can, like, some of the strongholds of the fair experience are like horseshoe competitions, pie contests, demolition derbies, things like that. How does that all come together? Is there some history to that?
Yeah, there is history to that, and you mentioned those. There's going to be a mud run, a demo derby, a tractor pull, and a horseshoe pitching contest at the Wyandotte County Fair this year. How do they come about? They come about because folks within the community that have an interest in those things participate in the fair. You know, as I said earlier, Gina, fairs are a community celebration. They bubble up from the community. They're volunteer-based. The incredible amount of volunteer work that goes into the production of a fair makes such a difference to the community. It involves the people that are volunteering. Senior citizens volunteer in large numbers to do those sorts of things because it gives them a chance to give back, to participate with the community. But it really comes down to interest within the community. Fairs reflect the community as a community celebration. So if you got people that are interested in demo derbies and they're involved in the fair, they're going to say, hey, let's have a demo derby or let's have a mud run.
And Bill Elder, who is still sitting here in the studio with us, the chicken judge we talked to before, you grew up going to these fairs. When you hear about this relevance, what do you think is relevant about the fair?
Well, I think that's exactly the point. It's like even in the rural communities where there's still, I mean, every county in every state has a fair, hopefully. And like everybody in every little town and every big town and every big city can go to any one of those, can go to that county fair and like you said, experience, you know, what a tractor looks like and what happens on a tractor. And, you know, if it's GPS on a tractor, that's incredible. And it's a lot of fun to see. And I can't even believe you'd be, you know, planting in the middle of the night. Are you on the tractor when that happens? I mean, there are a lot of questions. So I think a lot of people have a lot of questions like that. And then, you know, to be able to see everything else that is there and the experience, the community, to experience the community in like a giant barn where all these other crafts and things are there, it's a lot of fun.
Jim was mentioning before the smells, and he was listing off, he gave a list of things like sawdust and the food and the animals. when he described that list of things, did it bring back like a sensory place kind of memory for you?
Yeah, of course. You know, like the sense of smell really, you know, takes you back in a way that other things can't. And yeah, I mean, all of that stuff, like, you know, like bringing my livestock to the barns and the smell of the hay and, you know, all of that, it really, really got to me. And then there's also the, you know, we always called it the smell of money, which, I mean, if you don't know where the other side of the cow comes from when you're finding a steak, you got to figure that out. And I think that a lot of people are going to figure that out if they go to the fair and they're like, is this where my hamburger comes from? I don't understand. And they're going to figure that out.
Let's just pretend I'm a city person. Just pretend. Who doesn't necessarily know why I should care what it's like to see a tractor or to be on a tractor or to witness these things? What would you say to me? What would you tell me if I say that might just not matter to me?
Well, and of course, it's like 99% of us don't have cattle or agriculture in our lives at all. We don't. Nobody's on a tractor or nobody's on a tractor. Nobody's on a out on the range. But really, yeah, they are there. And that 1% or 2% of people are really making all of that food happen for us. And I love that everybody's getting more into their food and learning more about it. But I think we all should, and that's a lot of fun.
If I were to tell you, you know, that there was some day in the future where there wouldn't be a county fair, how would you feel about that?
I would definitely be sad. I love the county fair.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. Thanks so much to all of our guests for being with us. Bill Elder, your chicken judging stories were awesome. Thanks for taking the time to share them.
No problem.
And Jim Tucker of the International Association of Fairs and Expos, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tune in tomorrow for a conversation about the Prairie School in modern architecture and the Kansas City houses that were designed in that style. We'll also meet the musical duo known as Victor and Penny, so tune in. That's tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Christina Leffring brought us a story from the Wyandotte County Fair. You can hear all of our past shows at kcur.org/centralstandard, and you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. That's it for today's show. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date. That's with Steve Kraske, coming up next. Talked about was who's gonna feed them hogs. 400 hogs, they just standing out there. My wife can't feed them, and my